In the words of esteemed poet laureate David Croft, what Verstappen's in Vegas stays in Vegas. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. The man really does have a way with words. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 485 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. It's the F1 race you've all been waiting for, everybody. There's been so much positive reinforcement and hype and news for Formula One's big old debut in Las Vegas. And it was certainly one of the F1 weekends of all time, let me tell you. We have a lot to break down because this was a manic race week. And I think most of us are still recovering from the lack of sleep. Me in particular. I am people right now.
What's sleep?
what's that?
We have no idea. It's a foreign. It's a social construct, is what I say.
Who's that voice coming out there from over on the bottom right corner of our screen?
We don't normally have him on this show, but because we found out the man himself was in Vegas this past weekend, we had to talk. And we had to snag him on this show. Welcome back for the next two whole episodes of Motorsport 101. Welcome back, Mr. Ryan Eric King, everybody.
Hello. I'm glad that I am here. Oh, I miss sleep so much, man.
Honestly, I at one point I went 46 hours straight without sleeping because I couldn't crash at all during that weekend because the 4:30 practice times. And you got to be there for WETF1 because some wacky shit might happen during a practice session, which we did on Friday, funnily enough.
Thursday, you mean? Or it was Friday by the time we got around to it. We'll talk about that, surely.
Yes, technically in the UK it was Friday when it happened. So, it's weird.
It was Friday in the US when it happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was Friday at the track when
it was Friday in New Zealand when it happened. I mean, geez. But yes, we have the one, the only Mr. Ryan Eric King, who is now currently on cloud 9 because not only did he get to hang out 5 feet from Lewis Hamilton during this weekend, Max Verstappen said hi to him. So right now he's basically higher than Machine Gun Kelly on the Brazilian grid.
Now I got to be honest with you. Just like that guy, him saying hi was like, it was fine. It was mainly everyone else's reaction to him saying hi to me. That was the awesome part.
Okay, what was the reaction like? You got to share that now.
That's like, it felt like that I was somewhat notable by association.
Not that I was just, you know him. You sound like Will Ferrell in the movie Elf. Go, Santa! I know him. So we've got firsthand experience of Vegas's weekend in the form of Ryan Eric King this weekend, and of course we have our usual wonderful panel. You've already heard him, Mr. RJ O'Connell. How are you going, RJ?
That's right. We introduced the no melanin section of M101. I was not at Las Vegas. I was among the few people that was there, but was not invited. I want to have a good time. I want to watch more this weekend, but I got knocked out with, like, it wasn't a full-on stomach bug. I wasn't throwing up all weekend, but it was like the constant feeling of being on the verge of throwing up all weekend. Oh. For two whole days, knocked me out.
It's the suspense that gets you.
Yeah.
Only you could make nausea sound so appealing. It's like, oh, it's the suspense, it's the nerves that get you, yeah, doesn't it?
No, it's not appealing. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah. Because you know what's going to happen, and you're just waiting for it to happen. You're like, I'd just do it right now if I could.
I say, you've seen Skynet launch the missiles. You're just waiting for the bombs to fall.
what a delightful intro for Cameron Buckley.
But enough about Red Bull and their inevitability. Yes, here in the noticeably white left side of our call, I may or may not be speaking to you from a different device as per usual. Because I broke my MacBook screen the other night, so,
Oh, no. How'd you break it?
I may or may not have not been paying attention, and I may have closed the charge cable in the bottom left side of the corner of the screen.
Oh, no. That's tough. You squished a whole bologna sandwich inside the pen.
A bologna sandwich probably would have done less damage. Yeah. It's okay. I'll have it back sooner or later. Thankfully, I'm on the spare. Speaking of spares, Carlos Sainz. And the hole through the bottom of his car.
The man needed a whole heap of spares after free practice one was abruptly cancelled. We'll get into the reasons why very shortly. It's a heaped episode. We've got to talk about everything to do with I call it the lead up to race week from, I'd say, about Monday to Friday. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the race itself. Max Verstappen wins his 18th race in 2023. It just keeps getting more and more outrageous. Red Bull breaking another record, their 20th win of the season. No team has ever won 20 Grand Prix in a single year.
Once, they had to rip it out of someone else's hands.
Yeah, and Checo was up there too. Like this was a day for all sorts of banner accomplishments. What can I say? So we'll get into that as well. Some penalty discussion, because that's always fun, and Vegas itself, all in the next hour or so. But in the meantime, as Fizzy can find this real quick, if you can follow the podcast on Twitter at motorsport_101. You can follow our personal handles at Dre_WTF1, at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell. If you want to follow Ryan King and his work over at Jalopnik, you can at Ryan Eric King. Please feel free to do so. You know, apparently there's still Vegas stories that drew up, isn't that right, King?
Yep, I'm cooking some big stuff. Someone said something that they really shouldn't have.
Well, that's always an intriguing start to an article, isn't it? Brilliant, love that.
Oh man, Pierre's gonna love this.
Oh boy. Any guesses at home who invited him to this weekend? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't Alfa Romeo. That coming up. Check out Dolopnik, of course. Check out King's articles on there. I'm sure there's always going to be some good stuff cooking over there. If you want to see some of my stuff, you can do so at motorsport101.com. Check the blog section. A whole heap of written thoughts about this very weekend. I am Vegas out. I am running on emergency power for this podcast because I did not one but two written articles about the calamity that was Vegas this weekend. So do check them out on the blog section of the site. And by the time this goes out, there'll also be MotoGP's thoughts on Qatar because, boy, that was some shit too. So all of that over there on the blog section. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of my shows before they go live to the public. You upgrade to the $10 level to get into the supporters club via Discord. We get these episodes live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Jason, who's listening in as well as ever. Big thanks to Rezzy, who's upped his pledge to $10 again. Much appreciated, my friend. Also, I wanted to mention as well, we've got just 10 days left for you to vote for the Motorsport 101 Awards. Check out our social media. Check out our pinned tweet for that. As Siri goes, I'm trying to make people understand Siri, okay?
Don't yell at my coworker.
but you've got 10 days left to vote on the Motorsport 101 Awards. So, yeah, we are coming up. This is the final week of the mainline motorsport season coming up. So now's as good a time as any. You've got 10 days left. Get your ballots in for the Motorsport 101 Awards, and then we will sit down and discuss your nominees and winners in December in the run-up to Christmas. So you've got 10 days left to get those ballots in. Check out our Twitter, check out our website, the motorsport101.com awards coming to you in early December. Looking forward to
that. There
will
be less time to vote by the time this episode comes out. We said 10 days, it'll be less than that. Yep. So if you want to get on it, if you want to tell your friends about it, you better get a move on, pal.
Absolutely.
Tell them the day. Tell them the closing date.
Last day of November, so November 30th will be is the deadline for that. So that'll be the last day you can get your ballots in for the Motorsport 101 Awards. So, yeah, just over a week by the time this goes out, most likely. So, yeah, get on that if you haven't already. End of the season's coming around. You've got no excuse. And look out for that Driver of the Year section. Good luck picking between those two at the bottom. All of that and more, of course, on our website, motorsport101.com. Do check that out. Right. Enough waffling. Let's get into all of this shit, formerly known as the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
Gestures wildly.
Just arms, limbs everywhere.
If I wind up broke the will, I'll always remember that I had a swing in time. I'm gonna give it everything I've got. Lady luck, please let the dice stay hot. Let me shoot a seven with every shot. Viva Las Vegas.
So we had to take full advantage of King being in the house for this episode because he, of course, was in Vegas himself. We'll talk about a little bit about King about that in just a moment. There was a lot of strange vibes going into this weekend from Jenna Fry's big hit piece for the Associated Press. Always an entertaining time when Jenna comes out with some tea. The Wednesday opening ceremony with musicians like Cardi Minogue and John Legend. And eventually the drivers. And of course, the Friday fiasco with Carlos Sainz hitting the water valve that sprung up into his car, cracked his chassis, broke his seat, everything. Had to get a whole chunk of his car replaced. We'll get into that a little bit later on as well. And that led to a cancelled FP1, a delayed and extended FP2, the fans being sent home early, and $200 of gift vouchers going out per head. Oh, what
That'll
a week.
That'll get you most of a Ferrari hoodie.
Oh yeah, yours for 230 of your American dollars on Ferrari's gift shop. Have fun with that. So, what do we make of the overall race week vibe? And I'll let you in on a little secret, folks that are listening. I normally do the scripts for these episodes. I put the double length zone in brackets here for my notes because this was going to be a lot of shit. So, of course, we have to look in Ryan Eric King's direction first and foremost because he was actually there, of course. So, King, I mean, what was your general impressions? I don't think you've done Vegas before, have you? Obviously, certainly not for a Grand Prix weekend, obviously. I mean, not that old.
I don't think any of us are that old.
Not even close. But King, what were your general impressions of Vegas then?
The vibes were good.
I'm glad the vibes were good, because if you were on the internet, you really wouldn't think so.
Honestly, it was a big trickling effect where obviously most people work normal Monday to Friday jobs, so it Wednesday and Thursday it didn't seem like that many people in the city cared about the race, that it seemed like the worst fears come true. But once Friday came around for FP3 and qualifying, even that morning, you just walk on the screen, why is every other person wearing, team merch? It was a weird feeling. And then Saturday comes around, it is packed up and down the strip. Sidewalks, every people are trying to push past each other. It is, the city is enthralled with F1 fans.
It is wild, because by the time we got to the broadcast on Sunday morning, it was UK time, by the time we got there, I did spot the F1 put up the graphic of 315,000 for the weekend. That's a pretty good haul for a first run in Vegas. I know the Thursday/Friday figure was a little down, but they certainly piled in for the actual rest of the weekend. That's a pretty good turnout, I would say.
Yeah, I think, I don't expect that to change in terms of there being a big disparity of people just not showing up for Thursday, because it's Thursday.
Yeah, it's an average working day for a lot of people. So, it's always going to be a bit of a hit on that one. But I'm glad that the vibes were better when you were actually down there. Because like I said, if you were on the internet and you were seeing how this was going, I mentioned Jenna Fry's hit piece because that came out on the Monday, and it was just like, yeah, it's not going to sell out. The track layout looks like Spider Pig, we've barely even mentioned, General Motors dropped that enormous announcement that they're going to be building Andretti's power units, and that was a big fuck you for HMS F1 right there. You would think this was going to be a disaster.
If you're memeing about how a track is shaped, Are the problems really that bad?
You're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
To be fair, we knew this trap was pig shaped the moment they revealed the layout.
Yep.
What have y'all got against Spider Pig?
But like, for the most part, the real problems, I'd say the real problems aren't F1 problems. The real problems are essentially the city wants to continue like nothing's happening. Like, understandably, most people don't care about F1. But it's a simple matter of the things that they hate about the race are just the simple fact that the race exists. But the fact that the streets have to close for the race to take place. And there's no way around that. And it's not like, oh, we're stopping people from commuting to work or something like that. No, we're stopping people from being able to be degenerate gamblers sitting at a slot machine.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because the streets that are closed are major streets. So like the Las Vegas Strip, like two side streets, and the one that goes back up behind the casinos on the eastern side of the strip. Like, the only people that genuinely would have problems are hotel employees who are working the race, and like they're at work and probably are commuting in for like an overnight shift or going home, and that makes things a bit more difficult for them, which is understandable. And they made, I wouldn't say concessions to make things easier for them, but making things easier for people who need to get to places inside the track just made it worse for everyone. Mm. Because it is possible to drive in the quote-unquote infield within the track, because there are two vehicle bridges to get you across. The thing is, that doesn't discourage people who shouldn't be driving from driving. We still have rideshare and taxi drivers going into this area. Even though there are shuttles set up to take people from hotels to the track, they're still taking taxis regardless. Like, it is just sheer chaos to the point there are so many vehicles trying to use these two lanes out and two lanes in that traffic's at a standstill.
That doesn't seem ideal. But again, that's more a logistical Vegas as a city problem, it sounds like to me, more than F1 as a problem, you know?
Yeah. Is that fair unless to say? Like, yeah, it's fair to say, because F1's organizing the race itself, everything else is being organized by the, let's say, quote unquote local government, aka the casinos.
the mob.
No. They're corporations now, Dre. We got rid of those guys.
Oh, of course.
This is Disneyland now, Dre.
Yeah, they don't put people's heads in vices anymore. Those are the old days.
Oh man.
Apparently they're paying quarterback for the New York Giants these days. Who knew?
You can have the money and the hammer, or you can give the place back. You can't have both.
That's a wrong Scorsese film, Dre.
But it boils down to, like, just a bit more heavy-handed traffic management, and you solve these problems. Like, just straight up, hey, if you're in a taxi or a rideshare vehicle, you can't come in or out. If you're in a private vehicle and you don't have a reason to be at any of the locations within the track across the bridge, you can't come in. Like, just simple things would make things easier and keep traffic somewhat flowing and avoid people from just being complete dicks and driving on the sidewalk and trying to mow people down.
That would generally be an improvement. I think that would be fair to say. So that was cool. Interesting perspective, though. And look, I remember most of the drivers said after this race that, look, Miami was kind of the same way, where it was messy first year, but it was far better organized this year. I know Fernando Alonso said that after the race as well. So I think that they'll iron out a lot of this for year two. No question.
Yeah. I get you on that point. I went to Miami year one. I went to Miami year two. And I have the experience of having been to both those races in person. Like, King was at the first race. Hopefully, luck willing, he'll be invited to the second because he's earned it. But man, man, the first day of the first Las Vegas Grand Prix could not have gotten any worse.
Now, yeah, honestly, let's
I kind of feel bad that I laughed when the thing happened.
Oh. Yeah, so here's what happens. We all wake up really early or stay up really late on the East Coast to get up for FP1. Mm-hmm. Or we're sickos over in the European region and we just stayed up until it was sunlight out.
Hi, I'm the sicko.
Hi, Dre.
How's it going?
And, well, how much action did we get in FP1? Well, it depends on your definition of action, because what was it, 7 minutes into the session?
Yes.
A drain valve cover, more specifically, the concrete frame around it, fails while Carlos Sainz is driving over it. And it center punches the bottom of his car, completely destroys the tub, completely destroys the power unit. He needed a new seat. You could see daylight through the bottom of the cockpit. His car is completely destroyed. Esteban Ocon runs over the debris and the asphalt kicked up. His car is completely destroyed. He needs a new tub. And there's now a large hole in the track.
Yeah, the session was obviously immediately red flagged. It was not restarted because they figured out that the water valve had failed, and hence they had to check all the other 30 water valve covers.
So there were more than 30.
Yeah, there were more.
Yeah, it's that Toby Groner from AMUS said that they had to fix 30.
Yeah, and I believe it was a quick drying concrete they put in those holes to fill it up, basically.
Salt and asphalt.
Yeah, so yes. You dump it in. You just lift, yeah, you lift the cover off, you fill it up with concrete, you put the cover back on, and, like, it can't go anywhere
you
now.
Pray. You pray that holds.
They stuffed Paul Bearer in, like, a glass box and then jumped that shit all in the box with Paul Bearer. And I swear Paul Bearer showed up, like, a month later on Raw.
They just packed all the holes with CVS receipts from the giant CVS on the strip.
Of course.
CVS mentioned!
Hey! Yeah, but yes.
I can't take credit for that. King was the first one to that joke.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny you mentioned this because the FIA would have probably had more time to check the circuit if it wasn't for the insistence on having an opening ceremony at the track on Wednesday night, which, by the way, fun fact for Europeans, they wanted us to watch this at 3:30 in the morning, UK time, right? And then people clocked on, because I stayed up for it, because, again, could be news, WTF1, I'm a journalist for them now, there could be a WTF1 loose kind of story to make out of this, right? Then we find out that it was happening live, but then we were going to get shown a repeat on the YouTube channel at 5:30 a.m. I have never been so pissed off in my life. I was just like, what the fuck? I was so mad about that. But also, King, I've got to ask you as an American here, why did Kylie Minogue never catch on stateside? Because us Brits were going nuts about her being out there.
I don't know. Because, again, you have to remember that this was pre-internet. So basically, to become famous in music, you needed, like, time on MTV and, like, radio plays, which I don't know, for whatever reason Kylie Minogue just didn't get.
She was Tammy in the Street Fighter movie.
You're acting like the Street Fighter movie was a blockbuster hit, RJ.
It was. Street Fighter 2 was huge in the arcades back in the early 90s.
Yeah,
the
Street movie. Fighter 2 and all 37 versions of it across every game system that could run it.
You're damn right.
But not in the theaters.
I think for that one, we've got to tell RJ to go home and be a family man. Anyway, so that was so because of that opening ceremony, they couldn't check all the water valve covers that were out there. They said they'd done a high speed test, but there is nothing that can replicate a Formula One car going over those parts of the track apart from a Formula One car. Amazingly.
Yeah, this has actually been a thing for longer than people might realize. Back when sports cars were running the last of the unregulated ground effect, in the early 90s, we had a race at Montreal where basically a 962 got sawed in half by a drain cover whose frame had failed. Similar to this. The ground effect, it's effective.
It's powerful.
It's when you get in the suck to the ground. So yeah, that happened. This causes a chain reaction where, well, there's no FP1, so now we need to extend FP2, which at this point is so deep into the morning hours that it's not really representative of what we're going to get on race day in terms of temperature.
It was a 2.5 hour delay. They ended up starting FP2 at 2:30 in the morning local time. And it was a 90-minute session. So they extended it from 60 to 90 minutes. So by the time it was over, it was 4 in the morning, Vegas time.
And it should be noted, the teams, they have to stay to pack everything up and go home. Hmm. Well, go home. Well, go back to hotel in quotations. And the track was originally scheduled to close at 2 a.m.
Yeah, so this entire session took place after the designated time. This is very important because for the one-day ticket holders that only showed up on that day, and people holding full weekend passes, because those working security and those working the human element of this race, they went home to go to bed.
Yeah, they F1 would later would admit a day later when they released a 600 word statement about this scenario that they were getting close to violating Nevada's labor laws on how long people could work a shift in that area. And of course, if you have to rotate staff in and out, there's no guarantee you can get new staff in. And because of all of that, the safest thing they can do, and the only thing they can do, is they have to send the staff home. And if they send the staff home, the fans have got to go too, because there's no guarantee for their safety at the event. So everybody had to be sent home, and that's why FP2 was effectively under closed doors. It was a bit of a shitter. The fans were quite understandably pissed off.
I know it'll cheer them up.
Go on. A refund?
Refund. In this economy.
My sweet son child.
You see what I'm doing with this.
You get 200 US dollary dues to spend at the Las Vegas Grand Prix gift shop.
Have fun with a t-shirt and a hoodie.
You're forgetting the other catch, too. That's only if you had a one-day Thursday ticket.
If you are a full weekend pass holder, you could fuck off back home with pleasure.
It rocks.
Your refund was Cowboy James Storm yelling sorry about your damn luck.
For all 600 words of that statement, of which there was no apology because F1 didn't want to open themselves up to a lawsuit. So, of course, they are being sued anyway. You told a bunch of rich people you spent this money, but you're not getting the service. What did you think was going to happen?
Like, you wanted the full American experience. You get the full American experience. I'm going to sue the ever-loving shit out of you.
Here's a class action lawsuit and a quarter pounder with cheese.
Man.
Yeah, that 600-word statement basically amounted to, it is what it is, ain't it?
But yeah, go on, King.
All I'm going to say is the Viet Cong had RPG-7s and AK-47s. We, the American people, have class-action lawsuits.
Of course. Damn right.
Weapon in the American arsenal.
I don't know. Can you dip shoelaces in motor oil and yank them through the barrel to clean a class-action lawsuit?
Hey, but I'm pretty sure a lawyer knows how to make up billable hours.
The long and short of it, this is a terrible, terrible look for the pinnacle of motorsport to have 8 minutes of racing, of track time that people can actually see, sending people that paid the most exorbitant ticket prices home and because of all this. A 90-minute session behind closed doors, and all because nobody bothered to properly inspect covers?
I look at it like this, is that the more you compress a schedule for people to do their due process for track inspection, the higher chance the corners are going to get cut. and something is going to get missed. Yeah. Now, one drain coming loose, that's an honest mistake. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it at Baku. We've seen it at multiple tracks. We've seen it at Monaco. Yeah.
30
drain covers will be lifted up.
Wardell, Stephen Curry.
good news, King. I've got draft cover number 29. I like my chances of winning this Royal Rumble. this was not ideal. This was a systemic failing from who dare promote such a Grand Prix? Oh, it's F1 itself. Oh, that's a problem. They couldn't even blame the promoter for this one. As
the incompetence is coming from inside the house.
are we the baddies?
Are we the baddies, etc. So, yes.
I'll just say, like, people from other forms of motorsport were absolutely
yucking it up.
Licensed to fire at will.
The IndyCar and NASCAR communities had their pants down and helicoptering as we speak. They're still going.
Whoa. NASCAR can't talk. They've only had one street race. Get out of here.
Exactly.
NASCAR can't talk. That truck finale still happened.
Oh, exactly. So, yeah, basically, that was the fuming element of it all. The fans that missed out, the day pass holders that missed out got a $200 gift voucher, so enjoy your T-shirt and maybe a cap and a push. There's a sport element to this as well, because Carlos Sainz had to replace most of the elements of his car as a direct result of the damage of the impact, including his energy store, and it was the third one he'd used this season. You're only allowed two for the year. So, as a result, rules are rules. Carlos Sainz had to take a 10-place grid penalty for an incident that wasn't his fault.
The part I loved about this was... AlphaTauri's CEO, Peter Bayer, he used to work at the FIA. Mm-hmm. So him not working there anymore, he was fully open to explain why that penalty was given. And he pretty much explained, because he was still at the FIA when the rules were being made, and he was like, yeah, we wanted to put in like a force majeure clause for something like this, but the team said no.
Oh, funny that.
Oh, well, if it isn't the consequences of our own actions.
So is this yet another case of the inmates running the asylum here?
Absolutely.
Again, I love that even the stewards themselves, Derek Warwick, who was chief steward for the weekend, he put in the statement regarding Sainz's penalty. Look, we'd throw this out if we could, basically, because they knew it was obviously an act of God. And so, because yeah, obviously the track failed. It wasn't anybody's, it wasn't the driver or the team's accountable or responsibility. It was the tracks. They had failed them. So they wanted to throw this out, but they couldn't. And if they tried to, how much do you want to bet Toto Wolff would have picked up his phone in a very, very heated manner, smashed his Bose headphones against a desk and gone, we're lodging a protest? Because let's not forget, Mercedes and Ferrari are currently beefing for second place in the Constructors' Championship right now.
That means something.
That's tens of millions of pounds of prize money right there. This means something.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a hit of karma with the way those comments came out and then the way Mercedes' weekend went.
Yeah, because Toto was Toto gave it the big one about how, oh, look, it's just a bit of practice that we lost. And of course, the fans were not here for any of this. Look, technically, the man is right. It was just a practice screw up. And this could have been far, far worse, quite frankly. But, you know, we weren't here to hear any of that.
Carlos Sainz genuinely was centimeters from death.
Yeah, that's another thing that was overlooked in all this is like... Thank God
he escaped with minimal to no injury.
Yeah, he got lucky. Like
he got very lucky.
Like again, in the paddock, the safety cell from the bottom of the car.
Like I'd say in the paddock when the incident happened, like it, we knew like how bad it was. Like,
oh, King, you could see it. Like there was a hole, basically right where like the T tray on the bottom of the car starts. Like right where the plank starts was just a cylinder punched up into the chassis.
Like, yeah, you don't want to know the sigh of relief when he climbed out of the car. Like,
yeah, it was terrifying.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I feel like that's not been talked about enough in this weekend's coverage, that Carlos Sainz was a very, very, very lucky boy.
Because most people have heard that Carlos Sainz had gotten out of his car and then learned about the penalty and realized that, like, they've given the man the death penalty for jaywalking.
Yeah, because the thing is, when the incident happened, it was pretty unclear on the world feed at first, because it was never caught on camera. Carlos got a warning on his display to pull over and stop the car without any further explanation, which I think it was a bit of like David Croft jumping to conclusions, because if you saw the video, Carlos the definitely CCTV knew that he had to pull over.
Yeah, the CCTV footage, which came out pretty much right away, thump. Gigantic cloud of sparks, car grinds to a halt.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, terrifying incident. Carlos got very lucky in a physical I'm still alive sense, but unlucky in terms of the sporting regulations. Needs a must. He would qualify on the front row, he'd end up starting that Grand Prix from 12th in the end, and would go on to finish in 6th. What a vibe. This was all by Friday afternoon. This was before we even got to qualify, and then like the vibes were off by this point. Everyone was looking for sticks to whack the pinata with, and Mexico was only a couple of weeks prior. So the Grand Prix was going through it. I wrote a piece about it. I don't normally do that. I was going to make a big old effing Dre's race review piece about this intro, and I was like, I'm bringing this shit forward.
We got a Dre's week review instead.
Yeah, this week in Dre, which is a terrible thought for everybody involved. We finally got through all of that. We had qualifying. And thankfully, brackets, the rest of the weekend went off without a hitch. So, you know.
Thankfully for all involved.
Yes. Charles Leclerc got his fifth pole of the year. Good for him. It was a Ferrari front row lockout. Very close competitive session. We were all celebrating in the Discord because Williams had locked out the third row. Logan Sargeant, P6 on the road in qualifying. We were all going nuts about that one.
What the fuck is a kilometer, etc.?
Although apparently no one in real life did, because according to Danica, no one knows who he is. She's probably right, annoyingly. But we had all the pomp and pageantry. Finally got to the race itself. Verstappen had to work for it. He was obviously, he got promoted up to second after Sainz's penalty, and he went for it. Lunged at Charles into the turn one hairpin, and then all of a sudden, people had forgotten that there was a giant oil spill that had happened.
We will talk about the turn one incident, the first turn one incident, but we do forget that, he went deep. A quarter of the field went deep.
Yeah.
Some of them into each other.
You know why it was? It was because there was a classic car parade taking all the drivers around. Apparently, one of them started.
Three of them. Piastri, Leclerc, and Lewis. All three of their cars broke.
Yeah. All three of their cars shitted their entire ass full of doo doo oil out on the track.
Oh yeah, so
is why the grid was covered in speedy dry on the left side,
and there was just basically no grip for the first few laps on turn one. People had to basically tiptoe around. Verstappen runs Leclerc off the road. More on that in just a minute. Fernando Alonso spins. He collects Valtteri Bottas's car, who had started. By the way, Valtteri Bottas had qualified seventh, and his race was ruined after 10 seconds. Poor guy. So that was fun. Hamilton got caught up in it, and Perez got caught up in it as well. So we had this
Alonso safety. Spun himself on the brakes.
Yeah, just lost it, completely lost it. He said skill issue, basically, and spun out of his own volition. Now let's go to that main incident, because there was a lot of talk about this. We had a safety car. There was discussions on the team radio between Max and GP, his race engineer. Red Bull elects not to give the position back to Charles Leclerc. They'll leave it in the hands of the stewards. The stewards look at the incident at turn one, and they deem 5-second time penalty for Max Verstappen for forcing another car off the track. A Max Verstappen classic, as I like to say, of yesteryear. Now, there was a lot of talk about this. Charles Leclerc actually said after the race, he felt like it would have been fairer and better if they'd have, if the FIA and stewards had forced Max to give the position back instead of the 5-second time penalty. Now, I wonder, gents, how you feel about this. Has the 5-second time penalty outserved its usefulness as a deterrent? Because this is coming up a lot now this year.
I don't think that that's the real question. The real question is, should you be allowed to do something to avoid getting a penalty at all? Because, you don't see this in other sports. The closest thing you see to this is, say, in the NFL, in American football, where the aggrieved party could decide on whether the other team gets penalized or not. The penalized team does not have a choice in the matter.
Right. It's a plea deal in of itself that, you know, general rule of thumb in F1 now, if you run somebody off, if you pass somebody illegally, whether it be forcing another guy off or track limits, if you give the place back, 9 times out of 10, they will void the penalty.
Yeah.
Or void the potential penalty.
Because, yes, Ferrari could beg the stewards to force Verstappen to give the place back, but that's not in the rule book. There's nothing in the rule saying that you must yield a position.
Yeah, I mean, the rule inherently gives itself... It basically gives the person who committed the penalty leeway to say, oh, well, I'm going to leave it up to the stewards, but I'm not giving up track position.
Yeah, because if you don't give up track position, it's going to be a 5-second penalty because it's the only penalty they can give you.
Yeah, and there's not like a shutoff switch for the FIA to say, okay, well, no, we mean it. Dropping you back a place.
Yeah,
it's not a punishment they can give.
Yeah, it's not a punishment. They don't have a way to enforce it beyond the 5-second penalty.
Yeah, because you can just ignore it at the end of the day.
Didn't we just, like, how long ago was it we were talking about, like, George Russell openly saying the quiet part out loud? That, like, they're going to take more risks and take these 5-second penalties and just, like, try and drive away to cover that.
It was Kota. It was Kota, because that weekend during the sprint, he passed Alex Albon while putting 4 wheels off, took the penalty, and ended up finishing, I think, 7 or 8 seconds ahead of Albon on the road anyway, so the penalty was meaningless.
Yeah, if you've got a quicker car, you can put confidence in your equipment that you're just going to pull the gap anyway.
Yeah, and look, I am not... I've made this clear, and I've written about this on WTF1 over the season as well. I am not a fan of teams being able to game this rule, because Cam's exactly right. We're now seeing teams that can bet against themselves, they will drive awfully, or they will deliberately. I think Oscar Piastri called it premeditated, where it's like, we'll pass him illegally, we'll take the penalty because we think we can beat them on the road by enough for the penalty, don't matter. Alex Albon was taken out in Singapore by Sergio Perez doing exactly that.
We've seen about 4 examples of it in the second half of this season alone. It was Lewis and Piastri when they hit each other in Monza.
Yeah.
When Lewis crossed him over, well, Lewis just drove away. Ended up not mattering. Perez, call a spade, shoulder charging Albon into the wall.
Singapore.
5-second penalty in Singapore and George and Coda. This is now the 4th example of this. Thankfully, both of them got away with it as far as damage, which could not be said for those behind them who missed turn one.
Poor Valtteri.
Valtteri Bottas deserves a hug and a car that isn't this goddamn mid.
Go buy his calendar instead. It goes for a good course.
Tasteful nudes making the world go round, apparently.
Yes, sir.
But in this case, Max wasn't actually able to pull the 5 seconds because though he was quicker initially, on the medium, the Red Bull just grained up its front tires.
That's crazy. Remember, we talked about this. You may not have heard, but Las Vegas, despite being in the desert, is not 100 degrees all the time, 24 hours a day.
It might surprise people to learn this, that while deserts are hot during the day, they're extra cold at night. In fact, this was officially the coldest race of the year thus far. I don't expect Abu Dhabi to get colder. I've got some very big concerns if we do. But while the air temperature was consistent pretty much across the race, the track temperature continued to go down. Remember that. It becomes important later. Well, we get towards the end of the first stint. Max drops off a cliff.
Yeah.
And he's about three laps. There was an initial drop, and then a big drop, and then a big drop. And by as soon as you know it, Charles has passed him.
Yeah.
This does gloss over the fact that Lando Norris. Oh.
It took part in a very late night session of bottoming. It can happen to anybody in Vegas.
Oh, man. bottomed out, obliterated his car. Not great.
Briefly had to go to hospital as well, just to give him the once over. Thankfully, he's all right. But
thankfully, he escaped without any particular injury. I do think F1 needs to do something about the tires coming off the rims, given it's practically a spec wheel anyway. But this sets us up really interestingly for the rest of this race. Max pits early, bolts on the hards. Leclerc opts to extend his medium stint, bolts on hards later. And then
we get a second safety car later on.
Why was that?
I wonder, what could it possibly have been? Like, Cam, remind us.
That 5-second penalty that Max got dropped him behind George Russell.
Right.
So then he opted to pass George Russell. He was fully alongside for about 2.5 seconds, and Russell decided, side pod, front wing, nom 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 nom.
Again, another chapter in the George Russell book of dodgy racecraft.
Turns in, Max's car sheds a surprisingly big chunk of front wing, whole M plate and some of his main plane, and we get a safety car to clean up some of the debris.
At that point in time, did you think that Charles Leclerc's race was ruined by not coming in?
Not yet.
Yes, I did, to be honest. I thought you go with the crowd on that one, personally.
I get why they stayed out. What I don't think Ferrari expected, and I think there is multiple pieces to this, Ferrari just weren't quick on the hard.
Yeah.
And I think a little bit less of that is that they weren't quick on the hard. It's that being on the hard and being on a little bit, about 5 laps fresher tires, which is not a huge amount, but when you put a heat cycle through a tire, then it cools down. That can do screwy things on this case, and in this case on Charles's car. But the continuing lowering of the track temperature, plus the hard being more resistant to graining, Red Bull could just basically go bonsai for the rest of the race with Max. He could just do quali laps more or less for as long as he wanted. And the Ferraris just weren't quick on the hard. They lost their tire wear X factor with that. Very weird to say Ferrari had a tire wear X factor over Red Bull.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Big reversal of fortune for this year.
We've come full circle on this year.
Once Max caught him, and he caught him within 6 or 7 laps of the safety car for the debris, caught him, passed him, broke DRS, and just, it wasn't a huge gap. It wasn't like what we've seen Red Bull do all of this year, but it was enough that Charles didn't really have an answer.
And I think at the time that Leclerc got passed for Verstappen, Sergio Perez was leading on track, and that was the moment where I think, oh yeah, here it comes. This is the moment where I knew Sergio Perez was not going to win this Las Vegas Grand Prix.
Not again.
I think the telling one was when they dropped the hammer for the restart and Leclerc could not get away from Perez.
Yeah. Perez just stayed right with him the whole way through. Eventually he got past him. Leclerc got him back a little bit later on.
Phenomenal pass.
Oh, God.
Are we talking about the one on the last lap?
The final lap, yes.
Yeah, it's worth pointing this out because, again, credit to J.R. Hildebrand, who technically is an employee of mine, as a fellow employee of mine, over at the race, who pointed out the data on this. He looked at the telemetry. Charles Leclerc hit 221 miles an hour. There's a reason for this because Max had backed off. He had a 4-second lead with a lap to go. The gap's come down to 1.8 or so because he's trying to give Checo a tow to defend from a potential Leclerc last lap overtake. Perez is riding the tow. Leclerc is going at 221 miles an hour down the back end of the Vegas Strip with DRS open and an extra a two-car tow, effectively. He still brakes later than Checo does going into the penultimate corner. The braking data spikes at 7 Gs.
Ah, damn.
Which is... we're in fighter pilot territory with that kind of G-force.
Red Bull X2010 territory.
Right, like he's braked later than Checo, hit 7G on the braking force to pass him, and he's inch perfect into the penultimate corner to take second and steal 3 extra points from Checo going over the line in a photo finish on the final lap and the final corner of the race. That was that alone was worth half a point. Alex Jakes had fallen off his chair in excitement.
F1 TV commentary simply exploded.
Yeah, Hinch is like, I'm just going to stand and let this man cook. Because Alex Jakes was falling over backwards.
Dude, it's great. It's another reminder of, like, and I know Charles Leclerc hasn't always... there have been opportunities that Charles Leclerc has wasted on his own, but if people think that Charles Leclerc's atrocious pole-to-win ratio is all his fault, they do not know wheel.
To that effect, Max now has 11 wins from Charles' poles. Race which pace.
Which is crazy, but yeah.
That is a ludicrous statistic. Other ludicrous statistic, Max Verstappen has tied Sebastian Vettel for race wins.
What?
Dagger to my chest, please.
53 race wins. He is now tied for third all time. He had 10 wins going into 2021.
43 wins in 3 years. His 18th win of the year. His 43rd win in the last 3 seasons.
He's effectively had Ayrton Senna's entire statistical career minus the pole positions in a 3-year span.
It's laughable. Like,
what is this shit?
He is on pace to be around 70 or 80 wins by the time this regulation set ends if he keeps this up. He won't keep this up for 3 more years, but, like, holy hell. This is ridiculous.
Max Verstappen is, like, the main character this week because he comes in this weekend. He, you know what? I put it together. Max Verstappen is basically our generation's Kimi Raikkonen if Kimi Raikkonen was never the underdog in most situations of his career.
Max Verstappen spent most of this week going, if Las Vegas Grand Prix has no haters, it means I'm dead.
He called it the National League where Monaco's the Champions League. That's so wild.
Honestly, I'm surprised Max Verstappen knew what the National League was. He's a fan of the fifth tier of English football. What a guy. No, but I wanted to talk about that. I mean, I'm glad I wanted to talk about this as well, because, like, even Max had kind of come around on it a little bit by the time it was over.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, because he was singing
Viva Las Vegas on the radio going into Parc Fermé.
Masterful troll job.
I love the fact that he said he's going to ask Jerry Horner for lessons afterwards when it comes to singing. And he was doing this while wearing it, and he was doing this while wearing an Elvis Presley inspired race suit, which is just,
yeah, it looked like he had 3 Ferrari drivers in the Parc Fermé ride,
the
back of a limo.
Did you just say the fake taxi, RJ O'Connell?
Well, like,
you fucking sicko.
Oh man. But the thing is, like, as much as, like, the post-race car trip felt so awkward, but that was mainly to hide the fact that this permanent facility that F1 built doesn't include a podium.
Huh?
Yeah, that happened.
It barely has a media center, and it
have a media center.
The media center is repurposed other stuff.
Yeah, that's one of the things we were talking about last week, that people were going in on the media center like this is going to be a sign that this event is doomed to fail.
Yeah, Autosport's lot are very mouthy, shall we say. No, I was going to say, like, this was...
Well, no, circling back, there are reasons for, like, there not being a media center. I don't care. I think it's... I need to know more about F1's purpose behind maintaining a permanent presence on the Las Vegas Strip if their permanent facility there does not include a media center or a podium.
best laid plans and all that. So like, fun. It's amazing. We got a literal joyride. The Max Verstappen podcast was moved on the road.
Yes, the Max Verstappen experience featuring one happy dude, one dude in shock, and one dude in agony. There's a couple of pictures. Look like Charles Leclerc drove his nuts off all weekend.
It was a great
one of the his Q2 lap. I'd argue is one of the laps of the year. He did everything right. We just can't beat this guy.
He was one corner away from finishing third. I mean, it just wasn't fair.
We just can't beat these guys. very important also to note, Lewis Hamilton laid an egg.
He did.
In qualifying, and then got caught up in turn one, and then was, you know, equal victim of a 50-50 with Piastri. Perez confirmed P2 in the drivers.
Good for him. The first time Red Bull will ever finish.
He's hit par.
He's hit par. It's the first time Red Bull will ever finish 1-2 in a driver's championship.
It's justice for last year.
I mean, there's a couple things I want to point out before we wrap this up. First of all, Esteban Ocon, 16th to 4th. What a day
for him. You know what?
Let's go.
Yo.
It was King. It was Alpine's invite.
Oh, man.
Their guest brought them the strength.
Alpine, they have a vacancy at the team principal role. I'm not saying that that's my application, but...
the bare minimum will have been achieved and exceeded given how their management has gone the last couple of years.
But King, think of this, though, right? And you don't have to put the people who invited you out on blast if you don't want to. But, like, when we watch Mexico City, I know what we were all thinking is that when we go to Las Vegas, this track with so many long straightaways, we're thinking, yeah, Alpine is the team that's really going to turn some heads in this race.
I have thought about this in the last, like, 24 hours, and I think what it is that I think if there's a lot of braking zones, I think their MGUK is good enough that they can regen reasonably well. They can keep themselves going down the straights. At tracks where you're relying a lot more on the H and regen under acceleration, they're awful.
Yep. That seems to be the case.
They were horrible.
Because the thing is, one thing they wanted to clarify to a lot of people about, you know, the idea of them getting an allowance under the freeze to try to catch up, they didn't think that there was anything fundamentally wrong. They genuinely just thought, yeah, we just haven't gotten regen figured out. And it's like the FIA were the ones who stepped and said, like, guys, you need help.
I would say if you don't have your regen figured out on year 9 of these power unit regulations.
Year 9.
You may have a fundamental problem with your power unit.
Like I say many times, it's a race, and they've been left behind.
And they're not winning it!
No. No, dude. Esteban
Ocon was great. Like, I don't know where people got in their head that Esteban Ocon was just garbage the last couple weeks, but that dude shut a lot of those people up.
Yeah, like...
Esteban Ocon's been like an under-the-radar driver of the year contender. He's been very solid when Alpine have not been.
Yeah, and considering like how Q1 went down, it could have been a lot better than just fourth.
Yeah, it could have easily gone another way on that one. Shout out to Lance Stroll, P5 best from 19th on the grid.
We have to give this man his flowers. That was his best weekend of the year.
A genuinely exceptional drive from Lance Stroll. Fair play to the man. He's been due one, and I'm glad he's got it, because that was a phenomenal bit of work from him as well. Also, before we get out of here, we got to talk a little bit about Verstappen's comments as well. I mean, he was dunking. I mean, you guys mentioned it a minute ago. He was dunking all over this race weekend. And he kind of walked it back a little bit at the end when it was like, oh, I always thought the race was going to be fun. Bullshit. Oh,
you're a liar, and I don't believe you.
Is this another classic case of people going in that classic argument of the show versus the sports argument here? Because
I do like. There is one thing that I agree with Matt about is that, you know, I enjoy the show. Dre and I, we enjoyed the show. We're not performatively shitting our pants about the show every time the show happens. But I think it does make a good point that, like, you can't make the show out. And it's tricky, right? Because we talk about other series where, like, they want to put the racing ahead of the show when there is no show. And here at Las Vegas, sometimes I don't know. Like, I feel
I think it's a balance you got to hit.
Yeah, you got to find that balance.
I don't think it's a balance thing. It is. It's being acclimated to it. That it is not normal for F1, where it's normal for other sports, because you never see people complaining about the pomp, the pageantry, and drivers having to be involved in, say, the Indianapolis 500,
or any NASCAR race at Bristol Motor Speedway,
yeah, or any race in Europe. Like, I honestly, I edit the WTF One podcast as well, and my colleague over there, you may know him as former Red Bull Junior driver Callan O'Keefe. He made a great point discussing this with Harry Benjamin on his show, where he just said, "Hang on a minute. If Monaco, which has all of the same classic Vegas-esque tropes, wealth, you know, glamour, glitz, you know, tradition, all of that sort of vibe that goes into Monaco, and it generally gets a free pass from a lot of people in terms of its place on the calendar or being avoiding widespread criticism, why can't Vegas earn the right to have its own reputable place on the calendar?"
And because I was like, people grew up on Monaco.
Yeah. And I thought that's actually a banger of a point from Callan. And I'm not surprised. He talks a lot of sense on the show. But all I was going to say is that that's the one that leaked off the page to me. And I was just like, look, as RJ alludes to, I'm literally wearing a New England Patriots jersey as I record this podcast right now. I'm a big Americana guy. Everybody in this call knows that. I've loved American sports from the time I was a kid. My girlfriend is American. Hi, Gloria. You know,
I live just north of Boston. As I said before, there are three gods. There are three gods you worship here. Ortiz, Brady, Bird.
It's like, in that order.
It's sometimes
okay,
or
bozos getting back on track. Yes. Like, I think to a certain degree, people do feel a bit threatened that, you know,
yes,
the times, they are a changing. Monaco could be gone because Las Vegas is around.
I'd say Miami is at equal, if not bigger, risk of being gone, because Las Vegas is doing everything that Miami is doing, but, like, you have, like, the actual landmarks. You're not trying to stuff the Miami experience into a football stadium parking lot.
Like,
exactly.
I think Miami is also safe for another reason. It could replace another market that F1 has felt uncomfortable going to, where, you know, it's not that often you hear comments from teams saying that outside of actual Interlagos, they don't feel safe in Sao Paulo. And Miami, for a lot of Brazilians who choose to live abroad, is a safe place. Even though, like, to me, it's not like, yes, is it slightly more dangerous? Yes. Is it a place where it's like, oh, we shouldn't have an F1 race there? No.
No. I've never thought that. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, RJ, in the sense of it's understandable, because I was one of those people who wrote about it and I thought, hang on, Vegas actually, and it's coming, because it's coming full circle on the race, Vegas was a good race. Yeah. I'd argue it was a very good race.
People could race here.
Yeah, you could go wheel to wheel in multiple places. There were multiple places you could pass. We saw that the strip looked great on camera.
Yeah,
and overall,
when they found the right wide angles to choose, it looked great.
Yes. Yeah, and I was gonna say, like, look,
and yeah, like, yes, it is the middle of the desert. overall it's flat, but there are enough small, slightly little step changes to keep people on their toes, and it did catch a couple people off guard.
It's got some genuine difficulty to it. This is a good race, and look, it goes hand in, like, Formula One put 500 billion into this play. 500 billion? 500 million.
Formula One's not a hold of GDP.
It's not Walmart. 500 million. They put half $1 billion into this facility and this 10-year commitment to this place. They've done that for good reason. They believe the sport does have a degree of pageantry and showpiece entertainment that is what Formula One has always been. The sport has always leaned this way. So I'm not surprised at all they would pump this kind of money into gambling on Vegas like this. And as I mentioned that, and I know my colleagues at the race did as well, they wrote a whole video and article about this. I think you're absolutely right in that if Vegas works out and ticks every box, produces good racing, which is ultimately what we're all here for. If it produces that and it meets the best of both worlds by getting big name celebs, big name sponsors, gets extra mainstream attention that most races don't normally get. Monaco, Miami, Singapore, those are all going to be rounds that are going to go, do we actually need these rounds anymore? Now, I agree with you, King. They'll move around other places first.
Yeah, they'll move around other places first because all the places you named are also highly profitable events. It's not about picking out places that, you know, we need, you know, an X amount of night races. Well, like, we're not making a sim racing calendar. This is a business.
Right. And I think people want that. They want those staple, you know, custom built tracks that they've grown up with all the time. But unfortunately, the reality is these races all make money. And Vegas, like, I'll go back to what I said at the top of the show, 315,000 weekend attendance. Proof of the pudding is in the eating. People, and this is with $2,000 general admission tickets for most of the time running up to this weekend.
This was with timing that was heavily skewed towards catering to not the other two-thirds of the United States.
Dude, America got, like, the best Australia, New Zealand, Japan flyer round ever.
Yeah, because, like, I wrote about it before the race weekend, and it came true being there in person, seeing it. Vegas hosts these big events to bring people into town to spend money. And the city was packed in, and this morning, most of the casino bosses, they all said that it's the biggest event Las Vegas has ever had.
Wow.
Just straight up. They got exactly what they paid for. People across, like, say at Wynn Las Vegas, the dealers for the table game saying that they had to split, like, almost $1 million in just tips.
Fuck.
Dude.
Holy hell. $1 million just in tips?
Okay, so yeah, there was a correction from the account Las Vegas locally. So Wynn says the tip take was roughly $700,000.
That's like you're paying income tax on tips alone.
So yeah. A normal Saturday for a table dealer is at most $400 in tips. The night of the race, it was $2,000 per table dealer. That's how much they split between all of them.
You've got to declare tax on that.
Yeah,
that is an enormous amount of tip money. Holy hell.
Quote, this weekend set records for Wynn dealers in highest tokes in their 18-year history.
Holy shit.
Only the Super Bowl in Vegas that's coming up is going to equal that.
So, yeah, that's another thing. They don't think the Super Bowl is going to beat it.
Wow.
Dude, that's bold. If that comes true, I don't know what to say. Maybe the NFL is just finished. Football in America has lost the country.
We're doing 20 US Grand Prix a year. We're going to come to your town and bring F1 to your house because clearly it's working.
The big caveat is a racetrack will always have a higher attendance than a football stadium.
That's true.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, so for F1, it was a rocky start, but I think it's fair to say this is a huge dub, boss man.
Oh, yeah, we dodged an enormous bullet with no further issues to the track after day one.
Yeah, we were doing the Matrix back then. That was then cliched into so many other movies around that time after the first day. Like, don't get me wrong. Next 9 years of this contract better not start like the first day of the first year did. But yeah, but overall, in terms of success, like, this is not Caesar's Palace 2 that's for trimmings. They're not cutting this off 9 years early on a deal, like I'd seen some people suggest.
No chance.
This was genuinely,
they were never going to either.
Yeah. Yeah. This was.
That was just not a realistic point of view to take.
Yeah,
this was a huge to be made here.
This was a huge dub for the sport. They got away with it. They absolutely got away with it on Friday, but I didn't even realize just how well the casinos had taken off of this. And now that I do, yeah, this is an objective dub for Formula One. And
should we read through some of the MGM stats that they had on betting, because they said it was the most bet F1 race they ever had?
Drop that track for me.
Oh man, let me pull up the email that I got earlier, which I'm pretty sure.
Nice way to wrap this up.
Yeah.
If you're listening, so I think the most notable bet they had was a $200,000 bet on Max Verstappen to win the race at -200 odds. So that person ended up taking in $100,000.
I'd say Matt. It's a happy bet on Max, because Max had to knuckle down for that one.
That guy was probably sweating.
Dude, that man just
he saw Leclerc go past in the first and it's like, no!
Oh no, I'm losing my G-Wagon. The bank is taking my G-Wagon back.
Not the pimpmobile.
Six-wheeler or four?
And also, when I point out that it's the most bet F1 Grand Prix in MGM's history, it beat the previous record holder by three times.
Wow.
Dude, that's crazy. We can gamble anywhere now. Almost anywhere now.
Let's see. So the most bet, so the bets with the most props, the most money put down. So any other driver to win the race, so anyone but Verstappen, that was at +160.
Wow.
Yeah, Leclerc to finish top three, that was -150. Daniel Ricciardo to finish in the top 10, +300. And a Mercedes car to win the race, +1,200. But those four bets were the most popular bets.
Well, you also mentioned Mercedes, because Mercedes laying a stinker has also set us up with actual stakes in the final race of this year. This race was so awful for Mercedes that it has completely eroded their cushion in second in the constructors.
We've got three major championship fights going into the final round in Abu Dhabi this weekend in the constructors. 4 points separating Mercedes and Ferrari in the fight for second.
What 11. Is that DNS in Brazil going to do to Ferrari's psyche?
Oh, boy. That's gonna kill them if they don't get that second. There's a fight for fourth because, hey, McLaren's had a couple of dodgy rounds, and now Aston Martin's only 11 points behind them in the fight for fourth. So there's something on stake for Aston Martin there as well. They might actually come back and steal fourth on the last round. Just take Lando Norris's lunch money. That's a possibility. And we've got the fight for seventh, only 7 points separating Williams and AlphaTauri in the battle of the best of the bottom, as I like to call it, for P7 overall as well. So
yeah,
three.
Remember when we said Williams locked out row three? Yeah, it's as good as it got.
What happened to the straight line speed advantage? Apparently, it means nothing when you don't have tires left by about the midpoint of the race.
Yes, because Oscar Piastri went to Albon and said, if you don't like trains, then fuck you. that was a rough one on that one. So, without further ado, the final Formula One round of the year this weekend in Abu Dhabi. Gentlemen, it's almost over. We almost
one
get
more
a break.
Weekend underneath the RB19's boot.
We're almost home.
Oh man, this Red Bull flavored Odyssey is almost over.
We're almost home.
We're drowning in sucrose.
Abu Dhabi this weekend for Formula One, the final round of the 2023 championship. I would be talking about now the fact that, hey, at least MotoGP turned out better this weekend. It didn't.
No, it did not.
It really did not. And that'll be our next episode where we talk about MotoGP in Qatar for their penultimate round of the year. And, we had a title fight going in. It's now probably over. We'll get into that in the very, very near future in our next episode on MotoGP in Qatar. But that was Vegas, baby. And what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas. Same for King as well, because he'll be back on the next episode too. So that'll be fun. Ladies, you can find us one more time. Dre underscore WTF1 at CBuckley917 at RJ O'Connell at Ryan Eric King. Motorsport underscore 101 on Twitter, Instagram, Motorsport 101 pod, website motorsport101.com, and our Patreon page, patreon.com/motorsport101. You can back us on there if you are that way inclined. Thank you if you do so. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley, RJ O'Connell, and Ryan Eric King. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Dre, what size would you like your die cast?
1/124 scale, please.
I don't know if they make MotoGP in 1/124 scale.